Same MO. How many does this make?
Six, all prostitutes. But not one was Viet Cong. She saw nothing. And how many more, Martin, before your superiors do something?
I'll tell them again.
Why should your provost marshal care? They're still dingy girls.
Because I want them more than you do.
No one wants him as badly as I do. No one.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Vice of Miami podcast, and this is going to be our Christmas show. It's actually going to be also our last show for 2023. Just do a little bit different intro here, just getting things wrapped up for Christmas time. How about you, Tim? How's it going on your end?
Yeah, everything's going good, Mark. We're pretty much wrapped up. Just got a couple more gifts that we got to take care of, but otherwise, you know, we're going to do, you know, just quiet Christmas Eve, dropping at our neighbors, and then we're going to host another couple at our house for Christmas Day. Pretty much just enjoy it, enjoy things. You know, today here in North Carolina, it seems like it's Chicago weather because it's pretty cold for our standards down here. But I'm talking about, when I had to go get the mail, I was walking downwind, and I'm like, God, I don't miss this.
Yeah, same here. We're kind of wrapping up and getting the last gifts bought. The son just came back from college, his finals are done. Daughter's getting her finals done this week, and then getting everything ready, going to the in-laws Christmas Eve, and then my cousin's on Christmas Day. But yeah, our weather's actually here in Chicago here is pretty nice. Supposed to be up in the upper 40s this coming Christmas weekend, which is a far cry from last year. I think last year we had wind chills down in the negative 30s. So,
yeah,
definitely.
It was cold last year. Last year we were in Florida, and it was South Florida, and it was in the 50s when that wasn't a polar vortex, but that cold streak came in. But here where we live, it was 0.0 degrees, Mr. Blutarski, on Christmas Day.
Like we said, this is going to be the last show for the year, and then we'll continue second week, I think, of January. But anyways, we're going to get going here. We're going to cover show. Let's see, what show are we in here, Tim?
Number 63.
Yep, 63. Wow, we're flying along. So anyways, we ask that you sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering Season 3, Episode 15, Duty and Honor. And Tim, my beverage, I've got a regular eggnog, but it's got a shot of Shanky's Whip whiskey. And oh my God, let me tell you, it's not very potent, but man, is it good. It's not boozy, but you could tell it's in there, though. Nice caramely taste. Oh, fantastic.
Very nice. Is it warmed?
No, it is not warmed. I don't like my creamed beverages warm. I drink them ice cold.
There you go.
Yeah. But anyway, this episode is written by Martin Kupfer, directed by John Nicolella. The original air date, February 6, 1987, and it is the 59th episode overall.
And Mark, the plot for this episode is Castillo and an old acquaintance from Vietnam investigate a series of brutal prostitute murders bearing an uncanny resemblance to similar killings in Saigon 15 years before.
And I forgot to mention, Tim, I'm sure we're going to have a couple of visitors later on to our show.
I'm sure we will.
All right, let's cover the guest stars and the co-stars. First up, we've got Hang S. Noor as Gwen Van Tran. He was born March 24th, 1940 in Cambodia, and he was a Cambodian doctor and actor. Noor was a practicing doctor and gynecologist in Cambodia, and in 1975, during the communist-backed Khmer Rouge takeover of the country, he decided to conceal his true identity to avoid suspicion by the regime due to their hostility toward intellectuals and professionals. This stance cost his wife's life, as she and her unborn child died in childbirth while Nagore watched helplessly, all knowing if he assisted, they all would be killed immediately. Besides Miami Vice, Nagore appeared in Killing Fields, which he won an Academy Award, and some other notable appearances were Hotel, The Iron Triangle, China Beach, The Commish, and Vanishing Sun, among others. He was murdered on February 25, 1996, shot dead beside his car by a group of three men who were members of the Oriental Lazy Boys gang.
How that was, I just find that, what a life he had, that he had to go through. He endured a lot of adversity there.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace. Next up is Helena Bonham Carter as Dr. Teresa Lyons. So since she had such a short appearance in this episode, we'll cover Helena's bio in our next podcast episode when we review episode 16, Teresa.
Next up, we've got Judith Molina as Harriet, the Sunrise Hotel clerk. Molina was born in Kiel, Germany on June 4th, 1926, and she began studying theater in 1945. Later, founding the Living Theater with future husband Julian Beck in 1947. And remember, he was in, I believe, season one. Her film acting career started back in 1954, appearing in the early TV series Molly. And some other credits include The Queen of Sheba Meets the Atom Man, Dog Day Afternoon, No Picnic, The Secret of My Success, among others. TV and credits include The Equalizer, Adam's Family, and The Sopranos. Molina married Julian Beck in 1948 until his death from stomach cancer in 1985. And she died from lung disease on April 10th, 2015 in Englewood, New Jersey at the age of 88.
Next up, we have Gary Basaraba as Dr. Morse, who was born March 16, 1959 in Edmonton, Alberta. His filmography includes Alamo Boy, No Mercy, Who's That Girl, among several others. TV appearances include Brooklyn South, Law & Order SVU, Boomtown, NCIS New Orleans, among others. Nothing could be found about his personal life.
We also have Brad Sullivan as Jack Coleman. Born November 18, 1931 in Chicago, Illinois, he began his career on the stage performing in the New York Shakespeare Festival in 1965 and 1970 before beginning his film career in 1974 in the movie Parades. Other appearances include The Sting, Slapshot, Walk Proud, The Untouchables, among some titles. TV appearances include The Migrants, Moving On, Clinton and Nadine. Sullivan died of liver cancer on New Year's Eve in 2008 in Manhattan, New York, where he lived the remainder of his life. He passed away at the age of 79.
And then our final guest star is Michael Wright as The Savage, born April 30, 1956 in New York, New York. Wright is best known for his appearance as Elias Taylor in the original V series, which ran from 1983 to 85. Including the first miniseries, V, The Final Battle. Other filmography includes Wanderers, Dream House, Principal, Sugar Hill, The Gift, among others. Nothing could be found on his personal life at this time. And Mark, I remember him from The Principal because he was Jim Belushi's chief adversary in the school that he was. That was a good movie.
I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw parts of it, and I do remember him. All right, rounding out our co-stars, we've got Rosanna DeVaughn as Rhonda, James Silverman as Mike. An uncredited role goes to Joel Goodman as CIA agent Felix Lawson. And now some Miami Vice in the news. We just passed a birthday, Don Johnson, on December 15th, 1949. So 74 years, I think he is. Yeah, 74 years. Happy birthday, Crockett.
Happy birthday, Crockett.
You got Tim.
And also, according to Wikipedia, the latest work for actor Gary Basaraba was in a 2023 crime thriller, The Sound of Freedom. He played the role of Earl Buchanan. Now we're going to start the discussion of Duty and Honor. And the scene shifts between 1972 Saigon and 1987 Miami. As the scene opens in Saigon in 72, we see what is typically portrayed as a seedy side of Vietnam along the Ho Road.
We love you long time.
Yes.
Tubuku.
Some character ambles his way into a crime scene of a dead prostitute. We see that it's a young Castillo, then a DEA agent, who was investigating the murder along with Saigon police officer Guan Van Tran, and we see V.C. Hoare written in blood on the wall behind the body. They have a back and forth discussion that this makes six murders in the city, with the connecting thread that none of the victims were actually V.C. being the Viet Cong. Tran believes Castillo's bosses will do nothing about it, while Castillo's concerned the local police aren't interested enough in catching the killer. Turns out this was what we believe was a flashback, because now we're back in present day 1987 at an identical scene. Castillo is just giving his stare to the scene. Same writing and same MO as in Saigon. Castillo wants the vice team on this right away and informs Homicide on particulars before they even give it a go over, because he knows they will be the same. No signs of assault besides a broken neck, no fingerprints. Murder weapon was a military-issued K-bar and a knife wounds that are both pre- and post-mortem, and he wants the room sealed.
Hey, Tim, all those words about VC, you know what I'm thinking? Get some.
How can you lead them? How can you kill women?
If you know, you know, people. We won't say more. We'll be nice. So anyway, we are now on the St. Vitus dance, still present day 87. Crockett and his lady du jour, which is Dr. Teresa Lyons, and again, she's going to be carrying over to the next episode, which is actually a first for one of his ladies of choice here. They're on the St. Vitus dance when Crockett is called into OCB. He's got to take off, and she offers some choice words like, you know, maybe he wants to hear or something like that. So now at OCB, Castillo is discussing with the team that he's convinced it's the same Vietnam killer who is in Miami now. Even though the victim is not Vietnamese, the murder fits the profile. A woman with long dark hair, slashed up with the K-bar. And then Crockett, you could see in the background, he's dejectedly describing this as a military knife used in Korea and then Vietnam, which he served in. So he's kind of maybe already set in. Yep, kind of the expert. He's already getting his mindset. We got something not nice going on here. And now we're somewhere in some sort of a park or something that where a rally is going to be set up in a few days. Castillo is attending this meeting with Jack Coleman, private security firm owner, a consultant. He's contracted to work along the security of Juan Espinosa, who is a guest speaker in Miami and considered by some to be a communist. Castillo speaks with Captain Connolly of Metro after Coleman departs and wants Vice to be taken off of this detail to work strictly on the Hooker killings, fearing more are going to occur without any investigation, and Connolly agrees to this.
So now we have Crockett and Tubbs going to a VA Veterans Administration base camp rehab facility, and they talk to a Dr. Morse, who refuses to voluntarily disclose patient information. So Castillo will provide them with the corridor so they could get that. Crockett is upset because, as a Vietnam vet himself, he understands how these vets will feel about being questioned, as he did a few tours there himself. The doctor says most of the guys here are still in country mentally. Tubbs says they'll get a court order. Crockett phones Castillo to get that order, and Castillo says you'll have it within an hour. And then at the Hooker death crime scene, Crockett and Tubbs find a strange person milling about. This guy says, as Crockett is cuffing him, he used to be Inspector Tran, pronounced Tron, or more roughly Trong, and is asked to be taken to see his old buddy, Marty Castillo.
You're the police?
What the hell are you doing here?
I will speak with your superior.
You will speak with me, and fast.
License says his name is Nguyen Van Trang from Galveston, Texas.
Formerly Inspector Trang of Second District Police.
Lieutenant, Crockett and Tubbs got some foreigner down in Metro interrogation. He broke into last night's crime scene. Says he's a former Saigon cop.
Nguyen Van Trang.
Yeah.
Hopefully Castillo can hear the music playing, because that's got nothing but zen inside of it. Completely calm and cool.
Yeah.
It's a definitely departure from the Jan Hammer fast-paced Vice music.
Yes.
So now at OCB here, while Crockett and Tubbs were with Tron trying to elicit information from him, he again asked for the superior. Tubbs asks, why? So I don't have to tell my story twice. I don't know if I got that accent down, but no disrespect, obviously. Castillo sidles into the interview room, and Tran says he stops by. All right, we're probably gonna butcher his name. Tron Trang. I'm gonna do my best.
Just Tron. He's
Tron. He says he stopped by the crime scene to see for himself if this murder ties into the Vietnam murders, which he believes that they do. With the whole Vice team, Castillo indicates there were 6 more murders spread over 9 days in Thailand in 1973, just as in South Vietnam, but they have stopped abruptly. Trudy then brings in court order for the VA. Tron suggests getting with Interpol, and Castillo already did this. And then Castillo, much to the chagrin of the Vice team, orders all days off canceled until they find the killer. And Crockett and Tubbs leave to go begin their VA interviews.
Now we see the killer leaves this hotel, but not before being very terse and scorns the clerk for not looking at him when she's talking to him. Basically, he felt she was being rude. And then meanwhile, Crockett and Tubbs are at the base camp rehab, and the good doctor wants to start their interviews the next day, but Tubbs reminds him, the court order says immediately. Crockett says they don't want to bring up bad memories any more than the doctor. Then you have this montage that begins of the killer looking for his next victim, switching back and forth between Crockett and Tubbs doing interviews at the base camp. Montage ends with a hooker being killed and VC whore being written on the wall in her blood. Later on, it's now a crime scene with Castillo, Chong, Crockett and Tubbs checking it over. Crockett says they are getting nowhere, and then Castillo orders them to work faster. And when I believe what he meant, getting nowhere, is that they're getting nowhere with these vets.
Right.
And trying to tie one of them into the crime.
I think we have to clarify, base camp, it's what was spray painted on the sign. I think it said VA rehab, rehabilitation or something, and they just put in, you know, base camp, like you would find on some military camps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're referring to. So now we're at OCB. Trudy informs Castillo that the files for Interpol show several clusters of 6 killings in a 2-week period in several countries, including Thailand, Belgium, Laos, and others, dating back more than 10 years. They didn't really have any leads discovered, and the killings all stopped as abruptly as they began. Tron was in a refugee camp at the time of the Thailand killings and remembered that the day after the last killing took place, a communist leader named Ling Lao was assassinated. Tron is leading towards an assassination who gets pretty much bored awaiting around, basically. Castillo asks Trudy here to check the State Department to confirm if other sprees were followed by an assassination as well.
Now we might be getting somewhere.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they're getting somewhere. They're on the right street, going the right direction.
So now we have Crockett and Tubbs continuing their interviews with one guy who was always having nightmares of killing VC hookers. He finally tells Crockett and Tubbs to leave him alone. Then at OCB, Trudy shows Castillo and Tron reports stating all cases have an assassination except one in Copenhagen in 1984, in which a Czech military attaché was killed. Castillo and Tron go to Espinosa's hotel, or maybe his house that he was renting, to request that Espinosa cancel his speech due to the threat. But he is stubborn and refuses to cancel, not wanting to disappoint his followers. Even after Tron says the victims were or were suspected communists, which Espinosa confirms, as am I.
So now at OCB, Castillo orders all team members to the streets with a close eye on Gina and Trudy, who are working as prostitutes. And then we have another quick comedic relief scene here in which a bunch of bums are watching, I guess, I don't know if it was like a storefront TV or something like that, or just a TV outside in the park. And they're sharing some hooch from the same bottle. They pass it to Switek and he gives it a quick glance. He just keeps passing it along. He doesn't puff puff. He just passes.
Classic. Classic look on his face.
So meanwhile, I would have to assume close by, Crockett gets a feeling about some man in a long black coat walking around, and he goes up to Gina and Trudy, which were undercover here as prostitutes, and he has Gina go up to him and proposition him with the Vietnamese frame which he says, Baum Depp. She goes up there, goes up to him, says this, and he becomes violent upon hearing this, but he flees as Crockett moves in. Car chase here ensues, but when Crockett catches up out of the alley, the man has taken off and torched his car, and he's disappeared.
Good evening, ladies. Why don't you do me a favor? You see that guy over my left shoulder in the long, dark coat? My left, my other left. That's the ticket. You see him? Tina, do me a favor. Walk over there and walk up to him and say, Vom Dap.
Vom Dap.
It's Vietnamese. Just go over there and say that to him. Go on. Let's see what happens. Vom Dap. Vom Dap.
And I looked this up. The best I could find, Vom Dap means something like good looking or pretty looking or something like that, or goodbye, without knowing the exact spelling. And I also looked up a couple of maybe pronunciations with those meanings.
Dambit,
which I think that one was pretty looking or something like that. Here's another one.
Sundet.
Without knowing what he meant, we don't know. I would have to guess I'm good looking or you're good looking or something like that. That would make more sense, wouldn't it, rather than goodbye?
Right. And I think Sonny did that. I mean, maybe he just gave something Vietnamese and that's all he told Gina, because, you know, just go up to him. I think he was getting a strong feeling that this guy could have been their man. And if he
right.
was in Nam,
he, would
he
know
was
what
looking
it means.
To see if he, and not even necessarily know what it means, but trigger him.
Right.
Oh, that I got a hooker come up to me talking Vietnamese, and she's definitely ain't Vietnamese.
Yeah. So he definitely wanted to elicit some action from him, and he got it. So now
he sure did.
Definitely onto him.
So now we return OCB, and Gina provides a description of the man she saw to Castile, Coleman, and Tron. Coleman says he'll distribute it to the police security of Espinosa, and Castile says the media will post it on TV. Meanwhile, back at the VA, Crockett speaks to a vet involved in Operation Phoenix, who brings up a man called the Savage, who is credited with over 40 VC kills behind enemy lines, about half of them in their sleep. The vet says he heard that Savage was emasculated by a hooker, after which he killed her. He recuperated in Japan and immediately returned to Vietnam in 1970, fueled by his violent hatred of women. For obvious reasons, I guess.
So now it's nighttime, and we're along a marina. Castillo and Tron meet with ex-CIA agent Felix Lawson, and Castillo asks him to dig up anything he can on the Savage. But this wasn't before Felix says Castillo doesn't have many friends left at the old company. He didn't think he would call in a marker, which I kind of noted. We've got a little bit more of Castillo's past. I'm thinking, was he not liked in his past? Which, I don't know. Calling it a marker here. Well, we'll see what happens. So now at the hotel where we know the Savage is staying, and the desk clerk sees his picture on TV but turns it off before he walks in at the desk to get his room key. And then obviously she then calls the police. And then we've got a quick scene in Castillo's office where Tron and him are hanging out. And Tron says he can wait a bit longer instead of resting at home. I think Castillo suggested go home and we'll call you. He says, no, I've waited 13 years. I could wait a little bit longer. So now back at the hotel, the Savage sees his composite on his room TV. He freaks out and obviously he leaves. And then obviously he kills a clerk before beating feet here. So now we got another quick scene at the hotel front desk where the vice team is there and Crockett confirms her death.
And then we have Coleman talking to, as he pronounced his name, Costello on the phone, asking to be kept up to date, then hangs up and then surprisingly asks the Savage to pass him the ketchup for his hamburger. The Savage, who has been contracted to kill Espinosa, is hiding out in Coleman's hotel room. Basically, Coleman's his handler, or has been since the Nam days. In response to Coleman's berating him for prostitute murders, the Savage simply responds that he tried, but his hate got the better of him. He becomes violent when Coleman calls him sick, threatening him with unsaid secrets he knows about Coleman. The Savage says Espinosa will be dead by the morning and he'll be gone. And then at nighttime, along the docks, Castile and Tron meet Lawson, and he finds that the Savage and his handler, being Coleman, were cut out from the CIA after the Hooker killings in Saigon. Lawson says Coleman could freeze hell after he only met him just once.
It is not ours. As soon as the company found out what he was doing, the Hookers, they cut him and his handler loose. He's freelancing.
And who was running him?
A guy named Coleman. I met him once. He could freeze hell.
How come they always call it the company?
Strong words. I don't know why they call it the company. We'll have to look that up.
All right, now we're at Coleman's hotel here. Castillo and Tron meet up with Coleman in the lobby of his hotel about the Savage. And he believes that Espinoza, like all the others, is a dangerous agitator. And he's indifferent about the prostitute murders. Kind of like, you know, collateral damage, I would have to assume. Tron notes that Coleman doesn't seem surprised when Castillo says that Espinoza won't make his speech the next morning. So Castillo walks away and he calls Espinoza from the lobby phone, but his line is dead. And then obviously realizing the Savage must be acting on his plans now. So now Castillo and Tron speed over to Espinoza's place. And then we've got a quick scene here as an Espinoza guard checks the door and looks outside. The Savage sneaks up from behind and dispatches him with a knife. I'm wondering what kind, K-Bar, you think?
And then as Kraken and Tubbs are rushing out the door to meet up with Castillo, Trudy finds out that the man with Castillo is not Tron. Real Tron was killed in the 1968 Tet Offensive in Vietnam. Just thickening this plot here, Castillo and Tron arrive at Espinoza's to find his bodyguards dead. Castillo fires two shots to waken Espinoza. He does and grabs his gun from behind a nightstand. As they work their way through the house, the Savage blindsides and stabs Castillo, but then is shot by Tron, who leaves before backup arrives, but makes certain Castillo will be all right before he does and bids him farewell. At his hotel, Coleman is talking with someone on the phone, telling them the Savage won't be taken alive and that he's leaving immediately. He hangs up and turns around to be confronted by Tron, who throws the Savage's K-bar into his chest before leaving. Coleman falls lifeless to the floor.
And wrapping up the episode, we've got Crockett and Tubbs meeting Castillo along a beach in Miami, saying they cannot locate Tron, or nor does INS have any info on him. But he left Castillo a note, which explains it all. He assumed the name of Tron and was really a North Vietnamese soldier, now a colonel in the unified Vietnamese Army. He hunted the Savage as handler, which was Coleman, because it was his handler that was the real Savage. The killer was just a victim of war, and the true Savages are people both in the U.S. and Vietnam that nurture and create men like him. He hopes Castillo could still be his friend and prays for a better world, and where they could be friends in an open way, and he closes without revealing his real name. And I'll go into this Tron and Castillo thing in my review.
Dear Mark, by now, you know my name is not Tran. It was the name I assumed in South Vietnam. My true name is of no importance. But truth is, I was, when we met, a lieutenant in North Vietnamese intelligence. I am now a colonel in the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. For the past 14 years, I have hunted the man we now know as the Savage. Only when we found him did I realize that this sick man was nothing more than a victim, a weapon of war. The true Savage was Coleman, and men in your country and mine who create and nurture such assassins. You were Trang's friend in South Vietnam and Trang's friend in Miami. I hope and pray you are my friend now. I dream of a more perfect world in which we could also be comrades. Goodbye, my friend.
And the rating for this episode, IMDb gives this an 8.2. Tim, thoughts?
Yeah, Mark, I agree with this rating, as it was another great episode. It was a nice rebound from Down for the Count and Cuba Libre that were average with regard to their plot lines. Nothing exciting, especially Down for the Count, where we thought there would have been a little bit more blowback on Crockett in regard to Larry's death. In this episode, we start with the hooker killings in Nam, with Castillo and Tron investigating, and then similar killings in present-day Miami. The observant police work on the part of Tron reveals the killings happen around the same time as the assassinations of identified communist leaders. The OCBT tracks down Savage, a CIA assassin from the Nam days, but learns he's being handled by Jack Holman, who's the head of the security detail for Juan Espinoza. The big plot twist is Tron was really not Tron, but a colonel with the Unified Vietnamese Army who takes out the Savage and Coleman before going in the win. We also saw some Marty stares and Switek drinking swill with the sternobums. His face was priceless. Love this episode. Mark?
Sternobums. Sternobums. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a great episode, I believe. Yeah, good story, great characters. Tron was a little hard to understand at times. I'm guessing maybe in Vietnamese language, he's got an accent, kind of like maybe someone from the South or from New York here, you know.
He had a very, very heavy accent.
Very heavy accent. But anyway, it was very good. And as Marina from the Vice and Easy podcast noted, many mispronounced words here.
Joe Provost Marshall Kerr. The Steel Ding Beagles.
What did he say there? They still digging biggers? I could not.
No idea.
I have no idea what he said, but let me continue.
That's right. Now, you all know my security firm will be augmenting Senior Espinosa's security force.
Senior or senor?
Senior. He said senior, though.
He said senior, but it's supposed to obviously senor, right? That's what Marina noted.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Costello. I understand.
Get off my case, Costello.
And Castillo.
Castillo.
Now I'm thinking Coleman here is probably just trying to be the typical lazy fat pig American, you know, not pronouncing words properly. And it kind of pushed me over the edge when he says something about a breakfast.
Now, I'm starved. Let's get a good American breakfast.
I think Marina's onto it. And what actually ends up being another Castillo flashback in an opening scene plays in, once again, to the mystery of Castillo himself. The layers on him are slowly being peeled back. I also think the premise of the hooker killings could have been more strongly tied to the assassinations themselves, rather than the Savage just being pretty much bored around those assassinations until hit time. I guess maybe he's still pissed that his rope was being cut short back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And my question here on Tron and Castillo, why didn't Castillo recognize this guy as not being Tron, his friend back in the day? Because obviously the photo that Gina showed wasn't the cop that was in the beginning, and this dude here that showed up in Miami was the cop in the beginning.
Yes, he was.
So I'm guessing and I'm thinking, did Castillo know it wasn't going to be his friend Tron and knew it was probably going to be this cop and just let it be, you know, let it play out? Because obviously they were barking up the same tree here. One of those unanswered things, you know, maybe is that why Castillo wasn't liked in the company or whatever. It was weird.
Weird.
It was very weird. And also, does Castillo get his marker back now that he eradicated, by extension, Coleman, who pretty much went rogue here? But nonetheless, great episode, good story. I liked it. And this is where we usually do our music and trivia and goofs and stuff. But we're just going to have a little bit of fun here. You know, like we said, it's a Christmas and New Year's episode, so we're just going to have a little fun. You know, I finished my eggnog here with the Shanky's Whip, and it was very tasty, not too boozy. And Tim, you got any good, what's your most favorite Christmas song?
Christmas song?
Yeah, just pick one song.
How about White Christmas?
White Christmas. That's not bad. I think Silent Night would be my best. Gets you kind of cool, calm and cool, gets you in the mood. Let's just play a little montage here to get people in the Christmas spirit.
On Hollis Avenue, the dark, when I seen a man chilling with his dog in the park, I approached him very slowly with my heart full of fear. Looked at his dog, oh my God, a ill reindeer. But then I was
Anybody remember this one? Christmas in the House. And in this one. Do you know who did this one, Tim?
Wham!
Was it Wham? Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, you either love it or hate it. I think it's okay. I don't care if it's a copyright thing.
Little Mariah Carey. Played an awful lot on the radio stations.
Oh, yeah. And this one, I think most people hate it.
Heard this one today.
I think I heard it twice today. Little Paul McCartney. Was it Paul or was it Wings that did this?
I don't know.
And I always got to hear this one. It's not a Christmas unless I hear this.
Feliz Navidad.
Always heard this going to my grandma's house, which was surprising in a Spanish neighborhood.
Feliz Navidad.
All right, got one more here.
Hey,
of course you do.
It's Dominic the Donkey, jing a ding jing. The Italian,
you Italian wannabe.
La 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 la.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that one.
Of course.
Just trying to get everyone in the
Christmas. That's why you're in the back row.
Yep, exactly. Just trying to get everybody in a Christmas mood here. But I think we've got some visitors coming in here. I think they're at the door. I see them. And let's see. Yep, they're here. Well, let me go let them in. Okay, they're going to park their sleigh. Okay, park the sleigh. There we go. They parked the sleigh. Tim, I'm going to let them in, okay? And let these little runts do what they got to do.
Yep. We'll step aside.
Ho, ho, ho. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's not what I say. That's not what we say. No, we don't. Yeah, we don't. This is Tinkles. Tinkles the Elf. And this is Buddy the Elf. Buddy the Elf. Me and Buddy here, we're kind of taking over. We're just going to do a quick warm greeting to everybody taking over from Mark and Tim. And we're just going to spread some more Christmas cheer. We got a little poem here in the style of Miami Vice. I'm going to let Buddy the Elf here start, and then we'll go from there. And we wish everyone a Merry Christmas. We got the fat guy outside waiting, so we got to make this quick. So go ahead, Buddy, you start, and I'll follow.
I just want to say one thing. There was this one guy that was really mad at me because I kept on calling him Elf, and he said, "Call me Elf one more time."
He must be a South Pole Elf.
Yes, the South Pole Elf. All right, we'll begin. It was the night before Christmas in the neon-lit streets, where the rhythm of Miami danced a beat. Crockett and Tubbs, the dynamic duel in white, planned a takedown for this special night.
The city was alive with a holiday glow, but beneath the surface, crime continued to grow. Brackett revved the Ferrari, Tubbs by his side, as they geared up for a wild Yuletide ride.
Gina and Trudy, their partners in crime, decked out in glam, ready for the prime. The intel was hot, a lead they couldn't ignore. A drug lord's mansion by the ocean's shore.
Swiatek and Zito, the tech-savvy pair, in the Bugbuster van, trace the kingpin to his luxurious lair. And Izzy and Noogie pay them no mind. They'll always be a few steps behind.
The mansion sparkled with light so bright as the team approached in their cover of night. Infiltrating silently, they moved with precision, each member committed to the holiday mission.
The drug lord, unaware, celebrated in style, surrounded by goons living in denial. But Crockett and Tubbs, with resolve in their eyes, were ready to make this Christmas surprise.
A hush fell over the mansion's extravagant hall as the vice team stormed in, ready to enthrall. Guns drawn, badges shining under disco lights. They shouted, "Miami Vice, it's the end of your night."
The drug lord panicked, tried to escape, but Gina and Trudy sealed his fate. Swiatek and Zero disabled the security net as Crockett and Tubbs closed in, no time to fret.
A showdown ensued, a dance of gunfire in the mansion's opulence, a fight to inspire. Gina and Trudy showcased their skills, while Swiatek's tech wizardry gave the team thrill.
The kingpin cornered, no way to flee. Crockett and Tubbs took him down with glee. Handcuffed and defeated, he stared in dismay as the vice team celebrated a victorious display.
The mansion transformed from a crime scene to bright as the vice squad secured the drugs, ending the fight. Miami Vice had triumphed on this Christmas Eve. Justice served, a gift they'd forever believe.
A short little pause to speak of some fellow podcasters and a brief side note. We give holiday wishes to Marina from Vice and Easy, serving a Vice tea is what it's all about. See what I did there? A boot. Take off, eh? You know some reindeer called Vixen, Prancer, and another named Dasher. A Happy New Year to Aaron at Manic Movie Monday, covering movies, some slasher.
Back to the city of Miami, which sighed in relief as the vice team dispersed, their hearts filled with peace. Palm trees sway after this successful fight. Castillo wished Miami a Merry Christmas to all. And to all
a vice night. That was pretty good. I like that.
That was pretty good.
So again, yes. We like, make sure you leave plenty of beer and pretzel. Oh, wait, that's milk and cookies for Santa. What other advice you got there, buddy?
Just don't call somebody an elf one more time.
He's an angry elf. So again, we're gonna take off. We got a split. We got plenty of things to do before Christmas, and we'll give it back to Mark and Tim, and we'll see you next year, maybe. Let's go, buddy.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Maybe we'll see you at the North Freedom Railroad Museum.
Or Bear Boo Circus Museum.
Okay, they left, Tim. They're gone.
Yes, they did.
Enough. It's always nice having guests in here.
All right. Yes, it is.
This is where we always typically do Nerd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, but I think, Tim, what do you think? We'll just extend some wishes to everybody here for New Year's and Christmas. So
yes,
you want to go ahead?
And yes,
I
will.
A wish as well.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and a wonderful and prosperous New Year to you all, and we really truly are grateful that those of you who stop by and take the time to listen in to our banter, things you may or may not know, but as Mark always says, people, if you know. So right. With that, I turn it over to my partner, Mark.
All right, thanks, Tim. Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and basically just Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate. I hope it's a happy one for you and your family. Hope you're surrounded by everybody. And if you got to work, just know that hopefully you got a nice warm home to come to, after your work. But just to have a Merry Christmas. Hope it's a prosperous New Year. Let's hope it's a better one than this year. Again, thanks for joining us on our show. And it's listeners like you that make it worth it for us. So I want to say thank you to all of you. And wish you well. And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thanks again for tuning in and joining us. We hope you found this exciting and entertaining, more especially today. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to the podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on the podcast. On Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us. And if you got a few moments, please leave us a rating and a review. We're going to be immensely grateful. Thanks again for listening. And we definitely can't wait to share more with you soon. And again, this is the last one for the year. The next one will be, I think, the second week of January. So
we will catch you next time on the Vice of Miami podcast on show 64, covering episode 16, Teresa. Now,
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.